360 Podcast.
Muskies.
Oh, yeah.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, buddy.
How you doing?
Huh? It's cold.
How you doing there?
It's cold.
Fish muskies.
Anyway.
One of those nights. Yeah.
One of those nights.
You said no eagles earlier when we did them. Yeah.
You know.
Right. You had to go there, didn't you?
I hate the eagles. Not really. I have a great. You know my Don Henley story? Can't tell on the podcast. I'll tell you off air.
Okay.
Old Jody Michael had a run-in with Don Henley in Nashville.
Mm.
Might have hit him with a shopping cart at Trader Joe's. Anyway, not going to get there. He got real mad, I'll tell you that much.
Welcome to the Hotel Tennessee.
Welcome to freaking get out of the way, old man. This is the seafood aisle at Trader Joe's, and I'll run you over. Anyways.
Wow.
Ask her about it. That's a great one.
I will.
What's going on with you, buddy? You freezing your...
Oh, busy day off. Working. Doing a lot of stuff. Yeah.
A lot of stuff because he's been super busy because we're keeping the holiday spirit going with free shipping on Shield Rods.
By the time you hear this, free shipping on Shield Rods and free flat rate shipping all week, Monday through Friday at the Muskie Shop. Bingo.
If you're one of those people that hates math but thinks shipping's a ripoff, it's the week for you. So,
just in time for Christmas.
I'm telling you what, if you want a shield rod, now's your time, puppy.
Yep.
Hey, puppy.
Sure is. Mm-hmm.
That would be the one. No, I love them. The crazy thing is this. People ask me all the time if they're durable or this, that, and the other. I will tell you, been fishing the same two for a hot minute. So,
yeah.
I mean, I've got a bunch of them in reserve, and goodness gracious, for the amount of time I'm on the water. It's as good as it gets. Free
durability
shipping
means a lot.
Well, I mean, dude, the thing
it
is
really does.
It means a ton when you don't want freaking eyelets busting out or reel seats screwing up or this, that, and the other. So, I'm a shield rod man, and bang for the buck, that's as good as it gets. Jay, the only problem with the shield rod, it weighs an ounce and a half more than some rods that cost four times as much. So if an ounce and a half weighs, you know, if you can't handle that, take the take the change out of your pocket.
Good point. Good point. You
know, no, it's killer. Love them. Other than that, Jay, some of the crazier things has been going on this week. I've been sending you some pictures, been calling the Jambalaya the Tube Screamer.
Uh-huh.
We have a dude testing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Don't say anything. Don't say who or any of that stuff yet.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Titan Juniors, I got 10 of them back, like the prototype, the what we call a mold shot. So, if you guys are wondering how a bait, I'll just tell it's a kind of neat thing, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Here's how it works in the world of making musky baits in the year 2022. So, when I designed the original Titan, right, what we did is we did a 3D scan of that bait. And we got the dimensions spot on, so it's symmetrical. Because we went from like a handmade wooden bait where I was making the prototype by hand to, okay, both sides are identical. What's the perfect curve, this, that, and the other?
Sure.
To now this thing's in a 3D model. So we were able to take the full-size Titan and shrink the entire thing in scale, right?
Yeah.
So zoom in, zoom out. And played with it a bunch of different versions. And I got the final one where I went, this is it. Right. This is the 6-inch body. This thing is money. I love it. It's perfect. It runs great. All this stuff.
The proper amount of weight. Right. The whole 10 yards.
So what happens? It's just interesting if you guys don't know.
Yeah.
So you go from wood to a computer version to right now what we're doing is 3D printed. Ooh, fancy.
Yeah.
So they 3D print them. And once you test the 3D print, now we take the computer model and have a CNC machine make the mold, right? And I approved it for mold making, and I got the first 10 off the mold. Now, they're unpainted. They were clear. They're just is what they is. Mm-hmm. And so I did color testing on them. Long story short, I love them. They run great. I've been catching muskies on them, right? But I don't fish for other things, right?
And right, right.
We got them to a guy that's working with Livingston in some capacity that said, hey, you want to try these? You know, whatever, dude. Mm-hmm. You know, he caught some fish on Lake of the Woods this year on them in the muskie realm with a big one. This dude has caught more 30-inch walleye in the last 2 weeks on a Titan Junior than I've ever seen.
Yeah, I've been seeing some pictures. Unbelievable.
It's really unbelievable. Cool. It's turning into a multi-species slayer, which is really cool. And like a downsized thing. So really excited about it. You know, I'm not trying to pound you on it, but man, we're going to have him on hopefully next week or the week after, whatever works out, to talk about it, because he's fishing what's open in the north in this late season and fishing Green Bay and the Fox and all this stuff, which is freaky, the amount of fish. I know that, know for a fact there's a 22-inch smallie caught.
Okay.
Which is big. By yep. anybody's yep. standards.
It's so, a super gravel pig. Yeah,
it's a gravel pig of extreme proportions. Mm-hmm. And doing what we've always talked about, that sort of that hybrid twitch. So, you know, the place of the Titan Junior is either if you're fishing for, you want to be in that safe realm of 6-7 inch baits, you know, it's going to be the catch all. There's never been, in my opinion, a dive and rise bait sub 9-10 inches like a Titan that worked, right? You got the tiny little this and the tiny little that, but they don't run worth a crap. This thing's money, and it's really like the culmination of I'm paying homage to my friend, so I'm not trying to steal any thunder, right? A lot of what I've done in my muskie career is because of Booker, and that suspending that slow rise with shallow raiders, right?
Yeah.
Twitch, twitch, twitch. And that's what we're doing with the six inch Titan, which is like
yeah.
that hybrid twitch thing. But we're also getting the dive and rise out of it. But this has turned into a walleye and smallmouth killer, dude. It's really cool. So hopefully he'll be on next week. We're going to get on that. So that's
what. Yeah, I want to hear what he has to say. That's some great testing. Yeah, really cool.
Well, just to see what it's going to do. You know, that's always a question. It might work down here, but is it going to work up there? And it is. It's yeah, just, forget
yeah, he's fishing.
It.
Yeah, he's not fishing in Texas or something right no, now. He's fishing in Wisconsin. Bad,
fishing.
Yeah.
You know, there's you still have some open water there, especially yep. in the south, and then the Fox and all this different stuff. It's scary, dude.
Mm-hmm.
It's scary. That size, that profile, that action, forget about it.
Forget about it.
And the comment, hopefully we'll hear about it next week, was absolute confidence bait, absolute go-to. Because really with this 6-inch version, I'm not saying replace your Phantoms, but that's what I'm going to say. It's right there in the pocket, that 6-inch Phantom. So if you know how the general size of a 6-inch Phantom, I can't even talk this evening. We're right in that pocket. We're right in that size where anything will hit it. Big muskies, small muskies. We're right there where you go, ooh, not yeah. too big, not too small.
Absolutely.
And going for just that throw it anywhere, catch anything that's a big predator, which is awesome. So
mm-hmm.
that's exciting. Other than that, 2022 calendars are on sale at the muskie shop. So.
Yep, we got a few calendars you left. Got it.
No, 2022s, Jay.
Oh, no, those are long gone. 23s are out, Steve.
23. The year is 2023. Do you realize we are far past the movie The Running Man?
Oh, yeah. A look into the future. We surpassed.
What year was it supposed to be?
What was it? A late 80s movie with Arnold and.
What years?
I don't know.
I don't know. It came out in 1987.
Yeah, that sounds right.
It is set in the year 2019.
So, is it really?
I just Googled it real quick. So.
They failed. That doesn't exist. And, you know, 3 years ago.
I feel
close,
like,
but I, no I, cigar.
Feel like, I feel like I lived through the Hunger Games, though. Mm-hmm. Anyway, nonetheless, isn't the entire Northwoods the Hunger Games? Everybody just
what do you mean?
Everybody's just hungry.
Well, there's a lot of supper clubs, Steve, so no problem solved.
A lot of bows and arrows, a lot of supper clubs, anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
You got that going on. Jay, what do you want for Christmas?
Well, I know what you're getting.
Really?
Yeah, it's scary. Scary cool. I was telling Jody Michael about it the other day, so.
From you?
Shipping that tomorrow. Yeah, yeah.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's going to require some pictures after you get it, so that's all I can say.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do it.
It's one of those goofy things. It's pretty cool though.
Oh, you know how much I love goofy.
You do.
No,
well.
I don't. Not really.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. We'll see.
Wait. Okay.
Here comes.
Mark my words.
Here comes Jay's custom doormat.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
What do you want?
What were you asking?
What do you want for Christmas?
Well, I already got a new guitar, so mm-hmm. that's what I wanted. So. Got a cool guitar, and that's it. How about you?
I don't want anything, Jay. Peace on earth.
There you go.
You know, that's the canned answer. Maybe 6 or 7 more Panoptix unit on the boat.
I've heard the peace on earth thing a few times before, and I don't buy it.
No.
Panoptix, yes.
Just more. I want mm-hmm. the entire boat to look like a Best Buy.
Just screens everywhere. Get a 42 up front, maybe a 50.
Just can't even fish around them.
No, no. You won't. It'll just be a casting machine. The whole boat will be just built casting. It'll be for built. I can't talk either. Built for trolling. There will be no room to cast. There'll be no. There's obstacles everywhere. You got flat screens all over the boat. It'll
right.
Be cool.
Just the entire boat is just. What if the What if the floor of your boat was just the screen in the future, Jay?
Imagine the power requirements, though.
Mm-hmm.
You got the batteries, though.
I do. I am a lithium man.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. The fun of winter podcast, Chase.
Well, that, we've got a lot of questions this week, I hear.
We do. Let's do one more quick housekeeping here.
Okay. What's up?
Holiday gifts. A lot of the ladies listen to the podcast, right?
Yep, a lot.
A lot. Dozens. So, now, for real, we've got and Jay put them at the top. There's some cool Christmas stuff here, which if you're looking for the little accoutrements, I drink out of the Musky Shop ceramic coffee mug all the time. Super cute.
It's super cute.
We got a Musky Shop ball. Get you some Musky Shop balls for your tree.
It's called Christmas Ornament.
Got that. We got the mini coffee campfire mug.
That's also a Christmas tree ornament.
Uh-huh. And theoretically, anything's a Christmas tree ornament, Jay.
Good point. A lot of people hang their baits on there.
You could hang anything you want in the Christmas tree, including yourself. Anyway, so... God. Moving on. All right, I'm sorry. I'm in a mood, boys. I'm in a mood. Boyd, gentlemen, first time, long time, love the cat, meow. Following up on the electronics episode, I got a Panoptix. I'm going to maximize my setup specifically to monitor follows. So where do you advise I mount the transducer? Bow stern, midship, near my console. Should I place it in the forward mount or the perspective mount for a wider field of view? If I do place it near the console and that side happens to be facing toward the deep water, can I turn it to the underside? Shell it, weed lines, yada, yada, yada. Any other general thoughts, consideration? I'm thinking, blah, 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 blah. All right, boy. Depends on where you fish out of the boat. If you fish out of the back, put it in the back, right? If you fish out of the front, put it in the front. Now, the beam width is wider the further you're away from it, but you need to have either the transducer and the unit near each other, because what happens is you sort of lose perspective where they're at when you're dealing with them. Jay, my fish today was a Panoptix fish, full stop, period. There's no question about it. And, you know, here it follows in, and I go, it's down there, and you can't see it, and yada, yada, yada. and it sort of went away and it came back and it just sat. We threw right back at it, munched the first cast back, right?
Cool.
And so pick where you're going to be, right? And put that transducer like out of the nose of the boat. Get a mount where you have, I have a right height turret on my boat, which mounts to my Altrax. So I have a stationary thing. The one thing I'll tell you, do not put panoptics on your trolling motor because you're just moving around a bunch. Find a stationary place. Have the screen really close to wherever you're casting from in general.
Yeah, right.
You know, so if you're a front of the boat guy, have the transducer in the front, either on a turret or on a separate pole mount, and face that right at you. And what you need to do is you need to watch the screen while you're doing your figure eight and see the entire figure eight, the entire turn, the whole bit. If you can see that, you're going to see everything you need to see.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
You're not going to be able to watch weeds and the bottom and this, that, and the other at the same time. You're foregoing the search and destroy methodology with it. So if you're going to be a figure eighter with it, set it up where you see your entire figure eight, right? The entire turn. Once you got that, boom, done.
Good tip. Did you have on that fish today? Did you have an idea, a general idea, how big it was
when
you?
Oh, hell yeah!
Yeah,
I've seen so many. I went. The fish ended up being 42, right?
Mm-hmm.
I knew just looking. I went 38 to 44.
Yeah, cool.
So I've seen that grid on my screen so much. Mine's set up with a 5-foot grid, and you just sort of see it, and you go, I don't know what that is. Threw back at it, boom. So, you know, it's different. It's a different look. If you've not fished with panoptics yet, give it a look. For vertical jigging, it's silly, but when I'm doing the figure eight routine, I just want it set up where I can see the entire figure eight. Something I've been dealing with, too, is like, when you first get into this, I think I mentioned it with Josh when he's on last week. There's sort of this excitement about panoptics, and there's sort of a reality check when you go, it's not what you think it is, right? It's not this all-seeing eye. Now, he was asking about perspective view. I don't like perspective view at all. I run it in forward. That's it, right? The perspective is a wider field of view. I don't interpret the data that well, right? So I want it pointed at my rod where I'm figure eighting in forward, if that makes any sense. But you spend all this money, thousands and thousands of dollars on panoptics, and it feels like it's going to be this amazing thing where you just see everything, and there's still just these big blobs that come in, Jay.
Yeah.
Or there's this ball of light. You got to learn to interpret it. It takes time on the water, just like anything else. I'm
just going to say that. Right. You went over that last week. There's so much practice involved, and you build experience with it, and then you become to a level where you're proficient with it.
Now, what I can tell you is, after a bunch of years of using it,
mm-hmm.
is I definitely know the distance from the boat, because it'll say a fish is 15 feet away. I know what a 15-foot cast looks like.
Hmm.
Right.
Is that one of the more difficult obstacles to in terms of the interpretation? Was that one the distance?
Mm-hmm.
Or it was okay. That's kind of what
the distance and what everybody wants to see. You got to realize on panoptics, everybody wants to see this broadside muskie, right?
Right.
Here's your muskie bait, and here's a ball of light coming right at you. That's a muskie.
Mm-hmm.
And when they turn, it turns into a blob. So you got to realize that transducer, if you're seeing him broadside, he's setting north to south on the transducer in some capacity, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to get used to it. Now, when you see him broadside, it looks like the silhouette of a muskie, full stop, period, right?
Right. Right.
The rest of the time, here comes your bait, and it's a blob, and there's a big blob behind it. And so it depends on how you're running it. One thing that I did, and I suck at anything other than muskie fishing, is I ran around with a couple marabou jigs to try to get a feel for it. right? Try to catch a panfish or a white bass or a walleye or anything.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you'll sort of get dialed in that way. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Don't watch musky stuff. Watch freaking
crappie.
Yeah. Those dudes know what's up.
Yep.
Right. They know how to set a pan optics up. They know how to rig the whole thing. That would be my advice there. Jack, how many revolutions should I be doing in my figure eight when I get a follow versus when I do not have a follow? Ooh. Okay. So when you have a follow, almost a pan optics thing too. One thing I've learned is muskies come back way more than you think. Right?
Yeah.
So when you finally get a follow, you do not stop for a long time. Right? So let's say, Jay, we do two revolutions and we know he's there, right?
We know he's there because of pan optics.
And No. Just, I didn't say that. We just know he's there, right? We're not doing pan optics on this one. We're just doing, we see him coming in. And we see him in two revolutions, right? We see a flash or we see a tail or whatever, right?
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
Triple it. If I see him two times around, I'm going to go six. Right? That's a hot fish. He's staying. Okay? So don't come in and do one figure eight if you see a fish and then give up. You do that thing. You know, if you see him two times around, you better go six until you don't see him. Don't stop until you do not see that fish. And what I was saying with panoptics, I've realized how often those fish will break off, come back, right? I think we talked about it last week. The crazy thing is this. Guess what? When they break off, they don't go back to the edge. They go into open water. I don't know if we said that last week, but I've seen it day after day after day after day after day. When they break away, they go to open water. So your next cast back is not going to be back to the edge. It's going to be the open water. I've seen it too often, right? I genuinely believe the cast back fish that we've thought we were getting on the edges is a different fish often. Because I've seen it so many freaking times. They come in, they go and linger in open water going, what just happened? Where did that food go? And you pick another fish up off the edge. Right? Bite window. Think about it. I got a hot follow. The bite window's open. Things are moving. I'm in a musky area. There's not just one there. You might pick up a fish that's not the same fish. I've seen it time and time and time and time and time again. Once they break off the figure, they often go to open water 90% of the time. So my next throwback is going to be the open water. You know, as many times as it takes is the sort of the cop-out answer there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But what I would say is this. Don't do five revolutions of the same crap.
Obviously change, you know, width and depth and speed.
Mm-hmm.
After a few.
Right.
Trigger, yeah.
Right.
I mean, try to don't give up fish, on that fish. It's just like if you have a sense, whether, you know, whatever data is telling you that fish is still in the vicinity, you got to keep going.
Which is, you know, at the end of the day, let's say, you know, even before all this, and I'm not, we're crawling down the rabbit hole in electronics tonight, but, you know, before all this crap, dude, if we, you know, 2 hours we haven't had a follow and we finally get one, don't give up.
Mm-hmm.
Stay on it. Right. They will come back. So, you know, like I said, rule of thumb, if you see him two revolutions, do four more before you throw back. And when your next throwback, do it to open water. Right?
Yep.
That would be my thing. Anyway, Nick, getting follows on rubber like Medusas and Bulldogs, but can't get them to eat boat side. What does the musky Dr. Steve recommend for the cure? For the cure, I recommend Fascination Street. And as well, Boys Don't Cry. Goodness gracious. Rubber, Medusas, Bulldogs, Boatside. Almost the same question in some regard on the figure eight, right? So, we move a fish. He comes in on a Medusa or a bulldog. And we see him in the eight, and we go around one or two times. The next move I have is vertical jigging. If he won't eat it right there, I will drop that thing down and jig it up and drop it back down and jig it up. I've done it where we go in the eight, and that jig it two repeats, and then we go back in the eight, and I just keep the fish engaged, right?
That's the first move, like you just said, and I agree. I've seen it. We've done that.
Mm-hmm. Drop it down, jig it up, bop, 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 reel, bop, 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 reel, back to the eight. Keep mixing it up where obviously he liked the pull stop, but there's something missing. What I love about rubber baits is you can work them high, you can work them fast, you can work it, but you can also jig them, right? Your swim baits, your Poseidons, your swimming dogs, bulldogs, Medusas, toothy tufts, you have the availability to vertically jig that bait or a tube. And so if I've got him in a couple revolutions, we go around once, nothing. We go around twice, nothing. Just free spool that thing, let it fall. That muskie will pace it down. Often at times when you work it back up, he's going to hammer it. Right? We're adding a different phase in the figure eight. If you work it back up to the rod tip and he's still there, you better be ready to go right back into the eight. Right? So winter fish, and a lot of times if I move him once in the figure eight on a big hunk of rubber, I'm usually going to vertical jigging. Right? Keep him engaged. Keep something going on there where we're doing something of note. You know what I'm saying?
Like I do.
Something value.
Move number two.
Yeah, move number two would be, I mean, what you got it? You got the move number two, Jay?
No, I'm saying that fish, let's say you have strong data that said that fish turned around, went back instead of, you know, like, you know, good clarity or whatever. Right. The fish came in, it was semi-interested, but went back to where you were originally casting. Move number two is a bait change up.
Yeah, it's a bait change up, but I mean, you know, in that eight, I mean, we're talking about today, and I loved it. My client's vibe was you should catch every fish that follows, right? I love the sentiment. It is simply not true, right? Simply not true. Not going to catch them all. I wish we did. You know what I'm saying? But it's one of those deals where if we had the secret recipe, we'd get it, but you've got to just mix it up. I mean, 50, yeah. You got to have an alternative idea in the figure eight, right?
Yeah. Part of it's reading the fish, reading the fish attitude when it comes in. So distance, there are different things
right,
you do.
Distance from the bait. And at a certain point, it's, I tell people in the boat, my rule of thumb is, if that fish is directly on the bait, he is under 12 inches from the bait, right? We got him in the first outside turn. If he's greater distance than 12 inches, you have work to do. Right? Now you
good rule of thumb. Yeah.
You have to quickly ascertain. You have a split second ago, he's close or he's far. That's how I read a follow. Now, the other thing I would say is this, we mentioned before, is the body language of the fish. If he looks like he's just cruising, or if he looks snaked up. If he looks snaked up, you should have caught him already. But you're about to catch him in the first outside turn, right? If he just sort of looks straight and he's a distance off the bait, you need to figure out very quickly what he wants. Now, do I know every time? Absolutely not. I do not catch every follow, Jay. Do you know that?
Yes.
That's a guilty admission. Can you believe that?
No. I mean, it's shocking, one of the many truths.
Shocking truths of muskie fishing.
That's what it is.
I only catch 99% of my follows, Jay.
Conversion rate.
No, freaking whatever. Maybe 9%. I'm teasing. No, you got to make that snap decision where what I'm doing is if I see a distance that needs to be closed between the fish and the bait, it is a speed or an erratic thing. And we're trying to figure it out. Like I said, you got to instant. So if that fish has some S to him, little bit more speed. If he's just kind of coming in and the fish is just kind of there and it doesn't look snaky, I need to take him down and up, right? Couple little things there. With your rubber, like I said, the versatility of rubber baits, man. Bring him in. If nothing happens, drop it down. Bring it back up into the eight. Now, it becomes a matter of being confident on knowing that bait's coming back up. So drop it down, bam, 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 jig up, back into the eight. I can't tell you the amount of fish I've caught on Medusas and Bulldogs and tubes doing that. Right? He'll follow it down. He will vertically follow that thing nose down, and you go up, reel up, reel up, reel up, reel up, reel back to the leader and back in the figure eight. It does something to him, because what I'm trying to do at the end of the day is get that fish's head pointed vertically. It's the same thing we're doing in our outside turnover figure eight. Right, so in a good figure eight, we're going to come in, we're going to create a depth change where we go deep to shallow, right? The rod goes really deep, and it comes up shallow in the outside turn, right? We've covered figure eights before. I'm sure we got videos on it, whatever. It doesn't matter. So we're going deep to shallow. Jigging, I want to send him down and bring him back up, and I want that bait back up like it's getting away from him, right? Constantly evading, constantly creating the situation where I'm retaining his attention and I'm creating these moments where he thinks that bait is going to get away and he's got to make a decision, right? That would be the commentary, because it's often the case. You look at that outside turn, we've gone deep, now we're coming shallow, I'm in a directional change. That's where fish generally hit. Much like trolling, Jay, when do they hit? Directional changes, right? Yeah. So create as many directional changes as you can when you have a follow. Adam, best cold weather reels. The Tranks ain't liking any bit of the ice. Love casting for those late fall fatties. So Here's what I'll say. I have blown up more reels than the Taliban.
I think I know where you're going to go with this. Yep.
What?
Please continue.
What? It's okay. Whisper it, Jay. What do you think my winter reel recommendation is?
Old school round.
No.
Less plastic in the, the whole line roller area.
I'll say that here. Okay. I love it, but I won't go there, right?
Okay.
So the C3, the problem is the C3, it gets colder than a witch's, right? Because it's all metal and that thing freezes up quick, by the way. It doesn't, those will freeze up fast. I've been through, actually last year, if you remember, I won't name the name, I blew up two of them, and I blew up another brand in the winter on cold reels. So I won't say what I've blown up, but what happens is ice will gather in your paw. It'll gather on the worm gear in the paw first, right?
Yep. Yeah.
If you don't understand what the paw is, it's not like my last name, it's P-A-W-L, paw, not P-A-U-L. The PAWL, the paw, runs in a thing called a worm gear. The worm gear is what takes your line gatherer and moves left to right when you're reeling.
Yep.
When ice gets in that, things start to get crunchy.
Yes.
Okay? You start breaking things. Things start getting weird. I personally think the best reel for super cold water and that is just indestructible is the Komodo. It's stainless steel, right? It will chew ice up. The gears are stainless steel. All the components are stainless steel. It's not my favorite casting reel year round. I think the 400 size is way too big. I think the Komodo 300 size is spot on for the money. And those things, they can just take it.
Oh, cool.
That would be my commentary. It also, too, if you're in an area that's freezing up all the time, you know, the Kuma trolling reels, they can be iced up and you turn the handle and they just kind of go. They'll chew it up, cool. Right? Jay, for a lot of years, I love the C3s. I mean, I could fish round reels forever. The problem is this, is they freeze fast and they're not as robust as far as just like, okay, chewing it up. You have to be a little bit more finessey with them and paying attention. Like we've talked to Jake last year. It's like worming his reels up and all this stuff. But what I don't want, and I won't name names, is some of your big reel manufacturers are using plastic internal gears. Right? So you have your main drive gear, which will be brass, which is now brass on plastic. Not a great combination.
Yeah, it's all about weight savings these days.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so now we're putting cold brass, which is tightening, and cold plastic, which is constricted, and moisture, right? Because what you got to realize, every one of these reels, there are moisture inside of them, right? You take the side plate off of a reel, there's water in it. And it freezes, and it thaws, and it freezes, and it thaws. So what I'm looking for is sort of in that cold water, if I'm sub-freezing, the Komodos come out, they're stainless steel on stainless steel. Haven't broke one yet. They just sort of eat it up and move on with their lives.
Very cool.
You know, and that's a great bang for the buck reel, dude. I mean, the Komodos are great. Now, the other reel that's done really well in cold weather is the Pin. That Pin Fathom, yeah.
Okay.
You know, we were talking about those on the boat today, guys. So many people have asked me over the course of last year about that reel, and they really like it because it's I hate, you've heard me say it before, I hate when people say, that reel's smooth, Jay. Mm-hmm. Who give a rat's smooth and $1.99 will be a, buy you a cup of coffee.
That's the first thing people notice when they pick up a reel. That's what they're looking for.
But the thing is this, those things have been on the boat now for over a year and they're still quote unquote smooth.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different people fishing them. Just being
the tolerances are broken in and it's still got that alignment going on where it's smooth. That's
impressive.
Right,
yeah. So, you know, bang for the buck and durability, Pin Fathom, Komodo. You know, definitely like your some of your Boost stuff and your Trank stuff is sort of Cadillac-y, you know. I find Tranks, and I fish a Tranks every day. I find them to be a dang reliable reel, but they do freeze up. You know, they don't want to chew up the ice, and I hate to say chew the ice up, but it just happens anyway. Mm-hmm. That would be my comment there. All righty, Mitch. Dude, I just
Mitch!
God, Christ. I don't even know if I want to go there, Jay.
Where?
Has nothing to do with muskie fishing.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on Kanye West's recent statements?
Don't pay attention to that type stuff.
Just moving you? On.
Yeah, moving on. I don't care.
It's the funniest crap ever. Oh my God. Let me put it this way. Your boy Yee lost his mind. That's all I'm gonna say, okay?
Oh yeah, he calls himself Yee now?
Yee!
Tighten up.
Anyway, I can't go there right now. Not the right podcast.
Okay. Understood. Oh my
God, this is not InfoWars. Sorry. If you have watched the clip, it's kind of horrific. Sam, I love the people that write in, Jay, because it's just like half of them we can't read. That one slipped through the cracks because it was just copy and pasting.
Okay,
it's funny. Yeah, if you haven't watched Kanye this week, you're missing out. He's crazy, Sam. How do you determine at what depth to troll? What matters and how do you know? Is it instinct? Are you using electronics? What tells you what depth you need to hit? Love it. Great question. Sounds like a deep dive.
Musky Breakdown.
That's so freaking metal, Jay.
Oh, man.
So, let's talk about trolling starting point. Jay, we haven't been on the lake all week. We got one day to fish, right? And we want to troll. Yep. Okay? The key, what I think is the ultimate key to understanding the depth that we want to target in trolling, is a read on bait fish. Now, what does that mean? First and foremost, we want to have a couple points of reference. We've talked about on different podcasts about having points of reference for where bait fish are, where they may be, all this stuff. But let's say we're on lake, whatever. We've never been there. What I want you to do is I want you to drive around. Go ahead and throw a couple baits out, whatever. One, two, whatever you can do. Electric boogaloo. Throw them out and drive. Don't worry about catching a fish. And look at your bait fish. Let's say muskies. Forget muskies. My apologies. Let's say bait fish, right? Whatever marks you're seeing are all checking the box at 8 feet down, right?
Okay.
My baits are going to be running no deeper than 7. Issue we have in trolling, the number one curse of trolling, the number one mistake people make is running baits under the muskies, right? I want to run my baits at the same level or slightly above where the bait fish are showing on my electronics. Right? So, came up on the boat today. We were talking trolling. We actually made a trolling pass. Got a big rip, Jay.
Cool.
Didn't get that one in. Had a little bamboozle, but nonetheless.
You started out trolling. That was the first thing you guys did?
We did a little casting, I think, like 20 minutes in trolling.
And then you made a determination for one reason or another.
Well, like it was where bait was. You just simply went, there's more bait in open water. But what I'm going to do is check shallow, mid-depth. You know, we've talked about, if you've not listened to it, refer to the trolling masterclass, refer to the structure master classes. But what I'm doing is I'm observing the bait, the depth of the bait. Now, the other thing that I'm really concerned with is bait selection. That's a big thing in trolling, right, Jay? So, let's talk major trolling baits, right, in my brain. Headlock, Matlock, right? SwimWiz, Jake, right? What do you got? Legend Plow?
Grandma. 10-inch Slammer.
Okay. Keep them coming as far as like the ones where like these are trolling baits. We're like boom, boom, boom. What are you walking by in the shop?
Reef Diggers.
Reef Digger. Okay. So that's enough. So let's say we got those 7 baits in our corral or whatever. What I'm looking for are 2 things. Action and running depth. Probably the most, and I don't know if I've said it, Jay, if I've said it before on a podcast, frickin' let me know. But we're talking on the boat today about that bait selection issue, which is I want the bait that will hit my target depth at the least amount of line. Right? So I don't want a ton of line out because I have the ultimate boat control. I can do the triggering qualities, the swerving left to right, right? Stalling and all this stuff. So the shorter the line, the more responsive the bait is. And I think that's a huge consideration where you look at your running depth, you look at the 360 app, you look at the baits you have, you're marking them, you're paying attention to where they run, is I want the least amount of line out in general where I can hit that target depth. So I have a lot of action in my trolling.
I like that.
You know, I don't want to have to, I'm just making this up, guys. I don't even think they'll hit them. I don't want to try to get a grandma M9 to 20 feet or a Squeaky Pete, right? That takes the addition of lead and all this stuff. Now, what we've talked about is lead and rubber core sinkers and all this stuff to get depth without length, right? When you hear us talk about trolling mods and all this stuff, it is to achieve depth without length. I don't want to have a ton of line out because when I make a turn, it doesn't do anything. It stalls the bait. So the shorter the line at that depth. So the way I'm determining what to troll and what depth. Okay, backing that up. The way I'm determining what depth to troll at is based upon the highest bait fish or the general average of bait fish I'm seeing, right? What I troll is determinant on that. So everything's running at 8. I can run mid headlocks at, in general, 18 to 24 feet. All right. And sort of hit that. 3.5. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. So like a headlock that's set at mid at 3.5 will generally sort of bang around at 7 to 8, depending on the bait, right?
With like 30 feet of line out?
No, like 21 to 23.
Okay.
Right? That's pretty short.
Yeah.
So I want to figure that out with all my baits. Go, okay, I've got a general concept of whether it be the trolling charge at 360 or running your baits where you go, okay, those are the baits that will run that. Now, the next concept or the next thought process is action. You go, okay, so I need a, let's say we start out, Jay, and we got a 2-line setup. We can, me and you are in the boat, we can troll 2, right? Mm-hmm. And we are confident in our seasonality. And by confident in our seasonality, I mean it is late winter. It's late, right? We're up where you're at, right?
Okay.
Let's just make a scenario up. We're up on Succotoban, and bait is actually at 12, okay? Bait's at 12, which is not uncommon for this time of year, right? Bait's at 12. It is cold water, so cold water, the colder the water means I need to go slower, which means I need more line to achieve depth. Now I need to understand where my baits are running, so I'm going to find out what's going to get there the quickest. Now, like you were talking about the Reef Digger. Reef Digger gets down fast. A Cisco Kid gets down fast. A Depth Raider. Yeah. Right? So let's say we're hitting 12 feet, and we understand that X amount of line will get us at 12 feet at X speed, right? I'm going to make those passes in areas where the seasonality tells me or my patterning tells me the muskies are. What I'm always going to do every time I'm going to start with the fat wobble, right? And I really think in trolling, we have a fat wobble and a tight wobble. That is about it in general, right?
Yeah.
What right. do you mean? Grandma versus Jake. Matlock versus headlock. Tight wobble, fat wobble. And so we're going to dial in on that. So we're going to make multiple passes while changing up our presentation. So, you know, if we're trying to hit that 12-foot depth, or we know our bait's at 12, we want our baits to run at 12, you know, I might run the Depth Raider, and I might run the Reef Digger, you know, and then I might get crazy, and it might be the Grandma, it might be the Jake, and I'm going to try to target my first pass as a fat wobble, an erratic action with the shortest line I'm going out from there. Does that make any sense at all?
It does.
Okay, so the easiest, the lowest hanging fruit is short line, bad action. After that, I'm dialing in. I'm going to probably a little bit longer of a line to get more depth with a tighter wobble. And I'm dialing in that nature. What other elements can I add in this? Until I've tried those two things, right? So let's say scenario that I run into all the time, 8-foot depth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll make that headlock pass and that doesn't click. And generally, you know, excuse me, you know, matlock, whatever, you know, I'll go to that Jake or that Grandma and I'll, if I got a 2-line setup or a 4-line setup or whatever it might be, I am making sure that my target depth, my bait fish level, right? That light, whatever, it's not even a light penetration thing, whatever that bait fish is capping out at. You know, I'm going to do that wide pass, that fat pass. Then after that, that's where I'm getting tricky when we talk about adding weight or we talk about bottom bounce when you talk about grinding.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Well, yeah. I mean, you've got to adapt throughout the day. The bait fish is going to move throughout the day. They're right. not going to just be so. And, you know, as you go along, you're always fine-tuning. And again, mark your primary trolling lures. Make sure you have a Sharpie in your box.
Yeah.
You know, and have those little tiny critical notes on there about line out and achieve depth. You know, a couple different.
We've gone.
That is just such an important thing to do.
We've gone crazy on it before. But, mm-hmm. A, do not cast your best trolling lures. Period. Right? Separate, right? So we got these are my casting lures, these are my trolling lures, if you can afford to do it. And I think it is so imperative. Like, you know, his question, you go, how do you do that? Well, let's say I've read my bait, right, Jay?
Yeah.
Everything's at 9, right? The highest bait fish in general I can find is 9 feet. I want to have two ideas quickly. And I think that's where I'm going with this. Like, I want to have, like, two ideas quickly of these are my 9-foot baits, right? Where I know that my deep slammer, whatever inch, right, runs great at 9 at X amount of line. The sooner you know that, the better you are. And if you dig in your tackle box and it's written on the top and it says this guy is 9 feet at 37, right? I mean, he runs 9 feet at 37 feet of line. You mm-hmm. have a place to go quickly. You're not guessing anymore.
Yep.
Now, what I do in general, until I'm dialed in on trolling, give them the buffet, but have that one that's dialed in or have that two that are dialed in, right? And you go, how am I dialed in? Hit the bottom. Run the boat consistently at 9 feet. Let out line until that thing's banging the bottom nonstop. Reel it up a foot. Is it hitting? No.
Perfect.
And we've talked about that. Jay, you and I have done on the boat where... And I love what you guys know that you've been listening to the podcast. I don't have a lot of guests on here. Me and Jay don't care about guests too much. But, man, I geeked out when Duff was on, right?
Yeah.
Love Supernatural.
That was a good one.
But even with those baits, they're handmade. There's a modicum of variance, right? And I'm notating. I'm taking a Sharpie and writing on my headlocks, my matlocks, you know, and going, 23 feet is X with this, or... You know, 45 feet is X. Once you know those baits and what they're capable of within a certain speed range, you gain that confidence to target certain bait fish at certain depths. Again, beating a dead horse here. If you are interested in trolling, right? Sacrifice one day of your life to go and learn your baits. Don't try to catch a fish. I don't care if you got to get a lake that there are no muskies in to get yourself off your high horse. Go out there and run the baits that you think of trolling baits and learn what they do. Right? You go through, let's say you have a bunch of straight depth raiders, right, Jay?
Okay.
Learn the difference between a couple of them. Okay, this one's banging at 10 at the same amount of line, and this one's banging at 7, then notate it. Notate those trolling baits and then relegate them simply for trolling. So when you go, hey, the bait fisher tell me this and this and this and this and this is going on, right? You got a point of reference. I mean, that would be my take. The other commentary I make is this, is I said it before about don't run below the fish, right? Don't try to run way above them. But once you see where that bait is, you can generally determine the muskies are slightly below it, right? Now, muskies will make vertical moves of 10, 15, 20 feet when they see the right bait go by. You know what I'm saying? So it's not like you got to be in their face the entire time. Don't troll under the fish. I think that's the kiss of death.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, but I mean, Jay, as far as, I know you do a little trawling on that. I mean, on your end of things and you're relegated like one rod, are you like checking your baits? Do you check your baits like just on a musky body of water? Are you checking them just arbitrary? Like, what's sort of your process to go, what does this bait do?
Well, like you said earlier, what you want to do is get on a, get in an area that is very consistent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've got a few really good trolling baits and, you know, my setup is generally going to be river and small lake fishing. Mm-hmm. So if I'm doing any trolling, it's just like, that's exactly how you dial in the baits is you've got to make contact with that area. And then, like you said, reel in a foot or two and make sure it doesn't go over the same pass, the same 9-foot area, or whatever mm-hmm. it is, whatever you're trying to gain out of it for running depth. And then, it's just like, I've done that with a few baits, but
great sort of point there. Today, I had a little bit of drop in water depth on the reservoir.
Oh, okay.
And you know, the clients had never trolled, but they wanted to learn about trolling. So we spent a bunch of time just talking trolling on the boat, right?
Okay.
We come in, we make this pass, and I get a rip, right? Fish doesn't get hooked. Oh, well, we keep going. And then I snag two baits at one time, right? I didn't get up and go, oh, my God, I'm sorry. I went, okay, hold on, let me get them out. And they're looking at me like, whoa, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, he's not panicked. Guess what is going to happen when you troll appropriately? You are going to snag baits, period. Right? Making contact with cover and structure is imperative. You have to be fearless. I lose more baits trolling than I do casting. Yeah. Jay? Yep. So... we're on Lover's Lake, right? And we lose two headlocks in what? 5 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah. What
I was going to say for me is the amount of headlocks I've lost this year. So there's two there. Two painful. On Pike Round. One on Eagle. Two last week. I mean, it just happens. It's the cost of doing business. I guarantee you I'm over $1,000. I guarantee I've lost 10 headlocks this year. Right?
Ouch.
But I've caught tons of fish.
Yep.
And that's a gross statement to make. You go, that is a lot of money in baits, but you've got to be comfortable with it. Now, the commentary I make about that in a lot of regards is understanding where you're fishing. Don't go out and just like, I'm going to troll this area. Make passes with cruddy baits, right? I'll take some old, I didn't want to say, I'm not knocking a bait, but like if I've never trolled a section of water, Jay, I'll take like old man's. You know what I'm talking about? Like
yeah,
man's 20.
Yeah.
There are some baits, guys. I'm not knocking them. They catch muskies, but there are these baits called man's 20 plus and 30 plus, and they run nasty deep. And before side scan, because I'm trying to check an area out with my side scan and stuff, for like maybe, whether it be a down tree or some kind of a man-made obstruction or a crib or something like that, and checking it out, I'm not going to run into it. Back in the day, I would take these man's 20s or 30s, and just dog them through things, right? Make 5 or 6, 7 passes. You go, I didn't get snagged. I'm good, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not certain about an area, side scan it or run your electronics over it and understand what's there in multiple passes so you feel confident in it, or just run some dogs through it, right? And just sort of dredge the bottom, if you will, and make contact. What were you going to say, Jay? I'm sorry I cut you off.
You were talking about snagging lures, and it mm-hmm. sounds like when all of a sudden you have a depth change, and that wasn't something that you were at the beginning of this trolling thing. You were talking about, you know, we always assume a lot of people that are somewhat inexperienced with trolling are going out just trying to get the baits as deep as possible. Mm-hmm. That's not what you were doing.
Right.
You were trolling a specific depth, you know, like that one lake we fished earlier that year, this year when you got that big one, you know, that was all about getting in a specific depth, which is not the bottom, but
that was based on
fishing fish, an area that, that had, you know, contour changes, and making contact with that was necessary.
Yeah.
At the right depth, not too shallow where you're getting up into the weeds, but making contact just on the edge of a reef sticking out, you know, where you're banging the rock a little bit. And that was a key part of the success that day anyway.
Well,
we had to do.
Yeah, you just sort of make a read, make an assessment real quick. You know, the bait fish are X, Y, and Z, and the depth is this. And again, I mean, it's all cyclical and we're just beating the horse here, right? But until you understand how to address those situations. So what we're talking about, what we're hammering, and I think we're both coming at different angles, which would be, I am seeing this, right? I'm seeing scenario A, which is bait fish at 10 feet, right? Until you know quickly, okay, I need to run this lure at this length of line at this speed to hit that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're guessing. You've got to spend the time, and I think a lot of it's old Tom Gelb thing, time on the water, but I think it's intelligent time on the water. And like I said, if you want to be a serious if you want to be a serious troller, take a day off from musky fishing and focus on trolling. Figure it out, right? What looks good? What doesn't look good, right? How sharp do I turn my boat left? How sharp do I turn my boat right? And I'm watching one rod tip, right? How's that influencing that bait? You know, and go through your tackle box of your trolling baits. This bait's great. That bait sucks. That bait blows out, right?
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of things to be said about baits that blow out. There's depth raiders. There's Livingston pounders. There's this, that, and the other.
Not necessarily a bad thing, by the way.
It just happens.
Mm-hmm.
That'll blow out. You go, what baits are really good at trolling, what are not? And you've got to spend that time until you know you don't know. You just got to do it. And it's one day. And you go, if I spend that one day, if I've literally spent 8 hours on the water focusing on what do my baits do, what do they look like when they're coming through the water, right? How do they respond to fast inside turns, outside turns, right? How do they handle in corners? You got a leg up on 99% of the dudes. You got a leg up, right? First thing I do, I just got a new headlock in the mail this week, right, Jay?
Yeah.
First thing I do with it, A, I don't take the sticker off the lip because that's bad luck.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Do you know why, Jay?
No, why?
I want them fish to know they got to eat it because it's expensive. But leave the sticker from the musky shop on the lip unless your wife opens the box. But I take that bait out and I go, the last one I had in this color did this, right? It doesn't, color doesn't matter. But I go, my 10-inch headlocks do this, right? What does this guy do? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Short line by the boat. I want to see that bait in the water. Unless I'm in super tannic or stained water, I'm going to let 3 or 4 feet out. And I'm going to see what number makes him wonder. Right? Right there by the boat. 4 feet of line is the same as 30 feet of line. Who gives a shit, right? So put him out where you can see. Watch the bait when you're under power. Does he wander earlier? Does he wander a lot at 2.2? Does he wander a lot at 3.7? Does he wander at 4.4, right? Pay attention to that. Does he look good to you? Does he look bad, right? And then I'm going to do my depth test. Now, for you guys that want to take trolling serious, like you said, Jay, have your little areas. I know the area where you're by your house where you're checking those baits, right?
Yeah.
And you're going, this is my consistent zones, right? I know this is X feet. Take that bait and run it down your zone where you go, this is, I know for a fact if I drove over this, it will hit bottom at 10, right? Do it till it hits 10. Do it till it hits 10. Do it till it hits 10. And then make your notes. Like I said, notate your trolling baits. Don't put it in your phone. Don't put it in your text messages. Write it on their backs. Muskies never see the backs of those baits.
Nope. Quick access. It's important.
Yeah. And you just look at them. Hey, we're beating the horse. Winnie, winnie, Jay. Winnie, winnie. Yep. Anyway, Ed, love the last podcast. I'm looking for a new depth finder. And what are the difference between the Garmin Echomax CV and SV? What's the difference in the two? Ed, to be honest with you, I cannot contribute anything positive to that conversation. I don't know the difference between a CV and a SV. Whatever costs more money is better. Jason, I don't know.
Maybe.
Look at the features. I mean, look at the features and apply them to your situation, right? I don't know what CV versus SV is. I'm sorry. But just sit down and do a compare and contrast. There's a lot of websites that will tell you the features versus this versus that. You know, if I'm going to get the Echo Map, you know, I'm expecting side scan, down scan, and mapping, right? So if the maps, the side scan, the down scan are up to snuff, pick the one that's most affordable for you. The Musky Hammer writes, Jay, love the podcast. Meow. How do you approach points? Deep, shallow, shallow to deep. What's the method to the madness when it comes to points? Jay, what do you think?
Casting?
Mm-hmm. No, water.
Don't blow the spot.
No, water.
Never water blow skiing, the spot.
Jay.
Well, you know, it could be a point trolling. Like, that's the first thing you're going to do. So, yeah.
First thing I'm going to do is casting, troll it, but that. So,
yeah, I mean, that quite often could be the most effective way to do it, but you can work your depth precisely, and you can approach it stealthily without blowing the spot. You don't want to roll over a musky, you know. You want to approach it and just keep a distance, and hopefully you're somewhat dialed in when you start fishing in terms of location. So
yeah, I mean, what else?
You know, to run in depth, you know, it's just like, you know, fish something that's a sinking model. You know, plastics might be the way to go. It's just depending on a million things.
I think what you're getting at this, you're getting a little ADD on me, but it's contouring, right? Mm-hmm. Is looking at a bait that contours that point. Now, with that being said, if we have prime condition is in a point, Jay, right? Bucktails, topwater, shallow run crankbaits, right? If we're in a point and it's less than perfect conditions, what Jay's saying is you're saying a countdown, which is a great call, right? Or a rubber bait to contour that point.
Yeah, you're covering more prime zones that way in terms of a two-dimensional bait that's running real shallow. Right. So,
I mean, my call would be, pay attention to the climactic situation and the seasonality, right? Let's say we're prime and it's summer and we're looking at a point, man, start shallow, look for that hot fish and work your way down, right? Work your way off that point. You know, in the wintertime, the colder period or worse conditions, high bright sun, dead flat calm, work up the point. So from the first contact point of that point where it meets the main basin up to the shallow zone, right? The next thing I would say is this, and Jay sort of joked about for a second. The thing I like to do with points is troll them. Troll the heck out of it and then cast it, or vice versa, right? Points are trollable. They are probably the most trollable section of any body of water. If you got a main-like point or a hump, run baits over if it's not covered with weeds.
Yeah, right.
Also, too, man, something we talked about a bunch, the time of day. Let's say it's like prime conditions, right? It's July. Everything looks prime. We got low hanging clouds this whole bit. Don't run up on a point and expect them to be on the shallow zone in the middle of the day. Right? Just because it's prime conditions doesn't mean they're going to be always shallow. So check it and then get your mid depth and get your deeper point. You know, the deeper contact point of that would be important. James, looking to get into vertical jigging more this winter. What bait options do I have other than Bondies? Right? I like Bondies, but I've never caught a jigging fish and I want options in my boat. How do I trigger strikes looking to get confident with jigging this winter? Well, jigging baits. Bondi bait, right? Fuzzy does it. Red October tube. What else you got, Jay? Pegasus?
Yeah, Chaos Tackle.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The Fuzzy Does It's an interesting, well, jigs in general. I mean, you know, oversized jigs, you know, the bait rigs, Magnum Cobras.
Magnum Cobra.
And you dress that with a big old rubber trailer on that thing, tons of action, and direct weedless contact with your bottom.
Not with my bottom.
Weedless.
There's not many options. There's really not that many options in musky jigging. Not a popular. I mean, it's popular, but it's not like, oh, wow, we need 50 baits.
Yeah, you can use spoons, too.
Bondies are great, but spoons fall. It's not as controlled.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I mean, number one for me would actually be a jig.
Yeah. I mean, what I'll say is this. Whether it's a fuzzy or a Bondi, right? What screws people up in jigging is they're sweeping the rod too far. All the jigging fish I catch, I guarantee you, I'm not moving that rod more than 12 to 14 inches up and down.
Yep, keep it subtle.
Subtle. Bottom contact, up under tension, down under tension. Up, down, you're always in contact with that bait. What's interesting with the fuzzies, right, is they make a hang 10 that's got a big 10 blade on it that slows it down a bunch. But you can take that bait or the standard fuzzy and drill a hole in it and put whatever blade you want on it. It's pretty funky, right? What I like about Fuzzy Does It's is the hookup ratio. They hit it, they're hooked, right? Bondies, you got to set the dog out of it. So it becomes a matter of what do I want to deal with, right? What I've done with my Fuzzy Does It's is I've put a small blade. It's a number 4 Colorado on a Bondi bait, right?
Tiny blade.
Yeah,
okay.
I'll put this little tiny bait or blade, just like a Bondi on the back of my fuzzy, drill another hole in it so I have another hook in it, and I've got a Bondi bait that there's no rubber involved, and I'm not worried about ripping it through his teeth. They hit that thing, they're hooked, right? So that's a consideration. Although, again, Bondi bait's a heck of a bait, man. You know, it's just got the movement to it. And the water displacement, I would say that really vertical jigging is simple endeavor as far as the action. It's about boat control more than anything, right? You got to pace everything. If you're dealing with any kind of current, you have to pace things.
Yeah,
you've got to pace yourself. If you're moving in a lake, there's always a little bit of wind. There's a little bit of this. You've got to get everything sort of symmetrical, right? That bait needs to be vertical. You don't want to drag it at some weird hoppy angle the entire time. Now, what you'll be shocked at is how many fish come raging in on that bait, right? If you have panoptics, that's one thing. The other thing is this is always jig under your 2D sonar. If you don't have panoptics or side scan, jig under that 2D and you'll see the bait on your 2D sonar. Then you'll see a big old arch move in, right? What you're going to want to do, which is I call it poor man's panoptics, is put your scroll speed, right? Your refresh rate on your 2D sonar as fast as you can, right? You'll see that bait bouncing up and down and you'll see an arch move in. You know you got a muskie. Don't overwork a jig. I can't tell you how many muskies I've caught about. I'm going up and down, up and down, up and down, and then pause, right? And just stop, and they'll hit on the pulse. Don't be afraid to stop that jig. Every now and again, just give a you lift the rod tip, stop it, hold it for a second before you let it down. You'll be shocked how many fish hit that. I think really with vertical jigging, you know, you're going to have to put your time in. If you understand, again, it's the same thing. You're not going to catch muskies unless you understand their seasonality and their placement, right? But if you understand where they're at, where they should be, and what they're doing, implement that. Small up and down sweeps. Always keep that jig in contact. Right. One more, Jay.
Okay.
Trolling drag. Ryan says, need advice on setting up the drag for my trolling rods. Do I do it too hard, too soft? What is your thought on the drag for trolling? Me? I'll tell you. I set mine pretty freaking cranked down. Right?
Better tight than too loose.
There you go. Especially with big baits. Now, we're trolling headlocks, matlocks, 14-inch this, 13-inch that. That's a lot of bait, man. I don't need that fish being able to get a tooth into it or holding on to it. You still want slippage, though, right? You want to be able to pull a bait. So if you snag something, you're pulling drag. You hit a fish, you want to be dragging the fish. You know what I'm saying? You want to have some punch there. I mean, drag's a feel thing. Jake, can you think of a way to sort of articulate that, or what are you thinking?
It's an important part of setup. Setup being, okay, we're going to start trolling, and it's just like you're grabbing your baits that are marked, you know, because you have a depth in mind and all that, and it's just like part of it is checking the drag before the baits get wet, you know?
Well, I'm saying
like you said, you should be able to, I mean, the drag's got to work. Some real manufacturers have very, very grabby, it's like they almost got to obtain moisture in them maybe before they start to
slide,
so they could actually function. Yeah. And it's like, so you know, check them because, and they change throughout the day probably because of moisture buildup. So,
I mean, for me, I want to be able to grab at the reel face or at the rod tip, your pick, right? And barely be able to pull drag on my trolling setup.
Yeah, it's a feel thing. Barely. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Right? I'm a big dude. I eat my Wheaties. I want to be able to pull drag barely at the rod tip. If you're doing 3.5 miles an hour and you hit a 20-pound fish, he'll pull drag. Right? But I don't want loosey-goosey. I think a lot of guys miss fish trolling with loosey-goosey stuff, Jay.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a feel thing. If you're missing, here's the way to do it. If you're catching fish and you're not missing a bunch, you're good. If you're missing trolling fish, you're too soft. Right? Crank it down a bit more. And you'll find that happy place where you go, this is what it should feel like. Again, I drag so weird. But again, like you said, Jay, some of these reels. Now, I run the Akumas, right? That's my trolling reel.
Yeah, right. The connectors. And
yeah. And I'm a lefty. I have all left-handed trolling reels. Sorry. It's annoying, but I do. I think that's the only left-handed trolling reel, too. It's so horrible. But with that reel, I've seen that with other stuff back in the day. Those, they're just smooth. I mean, they're a slow reel, which kind of sucks, right? But regardless of temperature, they're pretty buttery. And you want to have that pull, but you also want hook penetration. I think that's the biggest thing is like we're trolling, we're worried about drag, all this stuff. You'll hear this big long zzzz, and there's nobody home. You don't have that punch, right? You need the punch. I would refer you to, shot a video this summer for Muskie Shop TV, which is our big trolling video.
Yeah.
Right. And you can sort of see me pull on the drag. I know it's not the greatest example. Drag is that weird thing, you know, of how much drag you have, but you know, you don't want to be able to rip it. You know, Jay, I've seen this done before where like, you know, on a trolling rod, put the leader in your friend's hand, right? And you want to be able to set the hook and just hear just a smidgen, right? Okay. You don't. You see what I'm saying? Like have it on a stationary point, set the hook, and you want to hear it just click just a little bit. You don't hear a big zzz. You want to hear.
That's the sound.
I know, but if you've ever trolled, you know what I'm talking about. I get it.
Yep.
You know, because the trolling fixtures, a snag goes, you know, but, and a bad snag goes, but, you know, I was telling the guys down the boat, I've never heard a trolling fish more than three, right? Normal goes, big fish goes, and then snags are, but, I've trolled too much. Anyway, I've talked too much, Jay. That's a bunch of Q&A. We're going to save some of these for next week. We got too many. Jay.
Yes, Steve.
Give something away. Give it away, give it away, give it away now.
Jay's giving away a Titan?
Jay's giving away his car.
Negative. How about another Titan?
Okay, what do you got? What's the contest?
Okay. Well, let's see. I took the possums back off, so we mm-hmm. can't do the possum thing.
Okay.
How about email Steve your favorite store?
No. Don't email me. Don't want it. First person to email Jay his Elmer Jensen fan fiction. It's got to be at least a paragraph, right?
Okay.
You got to email Jay your Elmer Jensen fan fiction. You'll win a Titan. Just email info@muskyshop.com. Attention, Jay, right?
There you go.
At least three lines, right, about some Elmer adventure or the premise for your screenplay or whatever it is, some kind of Elmer Jensen fan fiction. Jay Bird, say goodnight.
Good night, guys. Thanks.
Later.